Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Welcome to the SJP Wrestling Podcast. I am Si, your host, and I want to say thank you very, very much for pressing play on today's episode. Joining us today, we have Andy, one half of the excellent Bang Bang podcast. And we are going to go back to 1993 WCW and have a little look at the Battle Bowl pay-per-view. Possibly one of the worst pay-per-views I've ever seen. Andy says something very similar. We go back and watch this awful show so you don't have to, and then we can just sit around today and poke a bit of fun at it. Mentioning Andy and the Bang Bang podcast there, you can find them on Twitter at Bang Bang Podcast. That's Andy and his partner in crime, Steve. That's where you'll be able to find links to all their shows and so on. It's a brilliant podcast. I enjoy it every week. I really do encourage you to go and check it out if you have not already. Okay, you can find this show on Twitter also at SJP Wrestling Pod. You can also find the show on Facebook and Instagram. And also, if you haven't already, please check out my other show recorded with my co-host Mags called Chain Wrestling. You can find that again on all podcast providers and on Twitter at Chain_Wrestling. It's great. I'm having a great time recording it with Mags. It really is fun. It'd be great if you could give it a listen and let me know what you think. Okay, I'm not going to put it off any further. Here is Andy from the Bang Bang podcast, and he and I go back and look at the awful Battle Bowl 1993. As always, thank you for listening. Andy from Bang Bang podcast, over the moon to welcome you to the show. How are we doing, sir?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, not too bad. As I was saying before, this is a new experience for me, podcasting again without having a angry ginger man sat opposite me, and without the aid of maybe three or four cans of quite weak, well, not quite strong, but cheap European lager inside me. So we'll see how this goes, but I'm very glad to be joining you, Si. Thanks very much for the invitation, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm assuming now that we've both actually watched the pay-per-view we're covering today, which is Battle Bowl 1993, I mean, I'm assuming you don't actually mean the thank you, because I made you sit through something pretty awful, haven't I?
Well, as I've said on our shows quite a few times, I'm coming from a solely kind of WWF background. I watched some of the later sort of WCW shows, but the periods up until probably sort of 97-98 WCW, I hadn't seen any of this at all before. So when I watched this for the first time a couple of weeks ago, it was literally the first time I watched it, and I was completely unspoiled first time I watched it, so I didn't have any idea who won. I watched, because we covered Halloween Havoc 93 on one of our recent episodes.
Yeah,
obviously this led in, this followed Halloween Havoc 93, so I kind of watched the beginning of this pay-per-view just to sort of see where we went from Halloween Havoc 93. So I'd seen the first match before, but the rest of it I hadn't seen at all, so it was all completely new to me. And I obviously missed out big time in the past, because it's a treat, a real treat.
I don't know about treat, but I mean, 1993, I mean, it's going into 94, I guess, isn't it? It's late November 93.
Yeah.
It's not a good time anyway, is it? You look at, say, the WWF events of that period. The Royal Rumble in 93, I think, is probably the worst Rumble they've had. WrestleMania 9 was 93. It's not really looked back on fondly.
No.
SummerSlam 93, Survivor Series 93, also terrible shows. I mean, the only one that stands out, I think, is King of the Ring 93, and that's just because Bret Hart was amazing.
And I looked at the obviously what was going up against this in the similar sort of time, and it was, like you said, SummerSlam, Survivor Series 93. And that's kind of roundly acknowledged. It's probably one of the worst Survivor Series of all time. With the,
oh, it's awful.
The Hart family against what was going to be Jerry Lawler and his little knights. Yeah. And then obviously Jerry Lawler was either arrested or up on sexual assault charges at the time, and had to pull out and be replaced by Shawn Michaels at the last moment.
Yeah, and the knights all changed as well. I mean,
it was
supposed to be like a big storyline, wasn't there, with the knights going forward and unmasking, and one was supposed to be Greg Valentine, and Terry Funk was supposed to be one, but he pulled out a couple of days before the show. It's just not a good time in wrestling at all.
No, and we're obviously in that kind of pre... Well, Hogan had gone anyway at that point from WWF as well, and he was kind of in between starting to come into WCW a few months after this, and so it was a weird time.
Definitely. I mean, a bit of context, I guess, for everyone listening. Andy has been quite poorly. I am currently full of cold, so I apologise to anyone listening if you hear coughing and spluttering and whatever from either end, most likely myself. But yeah, you're feeling okay now, mate. You say you're getting over it, yeah?
Yeah, so I had COVID probably about a month ago now. We talked about it on our podcast before. Me and Steve both work in healthcare. I work in the NHS. Steve works in the private sector. Mm-hmm. And we're both kind of exposed. Like, where I work is like a COVID admissions ward. So we're both, and Steve works in a sort of, he's a manager of a older people's complex. So we were both kind of exposed to COVID quite a lot. So we kind of, I think people in our profession, you're likely to get it at some point, you know. So we did quite well to hang on as long as we did. Steve had it, but he was, I think, in his job, they get tested weekly anyway, all the time. So I think he got a positive result, but he was completely asymptomatic. But obviously I had to isolate from that. I was probably rough for a couple of days. I had all of the full symptoms, the cough and the cold and the loss of taste and smell, that kind of thing.
Right.
But being relatively healthy, I'm doing brackets, but obviously nobody can see me because I'm sat in my bedroom doing this. It didn't really affect me too badly, touch wood. But again, I've worked with people and who've been quite sick with it. I've had colleagues of mine who've actually died from it.
Oh, wow.
So for people to use it, I mean, you see a lot of crap on the internet, don't you, about how it's not kind of not really a thing. And people, you know, putting these fears about, oh, it's just like the flu and it's a big hoax. As somebody who's looked after people with it and lost friends with it, that's bollocks, really. Yeah, I mean, for the majority of the population, if you do get it, it won't affect you too badly. But it's, again, there are cases of, I've looked after people that have been fairly fit and well, have had it, and, you know, 6-7 months down the line, have still yet to make a full recovery from it. So it's not to be taken as a joke, definitely not. But fingers crossed, we started doing vaccinations today in Bristol. So by the time you hear this, we'll probably be... it would be vaxxed up and kind of looking forward to a bright future next year, fingers crossed. But
hopefully so. I agree, all the stuff you read on the internet, people are saying you don't need a mask and it's not as bad as it's described. It's just absolutely, it infuriates me because people are obviously losing their lives, people are being made very poorly. It's so frustrating. Yeah. But I suppose you get idiots all over the place, don't you? So
I can see in certain, because again, in the first wave, the sort of where I'm based in the West Country in Bristol, it wasn't too bad, and you didn't really know of anybody that had it. And I can see in that point of view where, again, if you're in an area where your cases are quite low, you don't really ever come in contact with anybody who can say they've had it. You would think of it, well, what's all the fuss about, you know?
Yeah.
But this time around, on the second wave, Bristol's been quite bad in terms of numbers, and again, a lot of people in this area have had it, so I think it might be a bit of an eye-opener to people, hopefully, that it's not good and it's nothing to be sort of taken lightly. But again, fingers crossed, we're getting there. Anyway, we want to talk about something really depressing, which was this pay-per-view. So,
whatever. Okay. I suppose I've sort of pushed it back and tried to avoid it as much as I can. But yeah, we'll have a little look at this, shall we? This is the Battle Bowl pay-per-view from 1993, promoted by WCW. First aired November 20th, 1993, from the Pensacola Civic Center. The attendance listed as 7,000. I can guarantee that I would say less than half of those actually paid. From that time.
This, this time period.
Yeah. For those unfamiliar, the Lethal Lottery stroke Battle Bowl concept had been used in the past. It was used at a couple of Starcades not long before this. The premise is that everyone's name is in, it is drawn at random. You're paired up with whoever in a tag team, whoever your name is drawn alongside, to face another randomly drawn team. The winning team then advances to a battle royal at the end to win some ring or some nonsense.
I did wonder what the actual point was.
I think you can this whole era of WCW, you can sum up with that statement.
Yeah, it seems to be, what are they actually, you know, what do you get at the end? Is it a ring or, because it's never actually mentioned, you just win the Battle Bowl.
Mm.
What you gain from that afterwards is not really specified. Just, you know, well, a notch on the...
At one stage, Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone kind of... It's almost like they hint towards the winner of the Battle Bowl must be in line for a title shot of some sort, maybe, somehow, at some title.
Yeah.
They don't really know. It's almost like they're trying to add prestige without committing to anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I can see that that would kind of make sense. But then, obviously, the chap who actually wins it, then, yeah, doesn't actually make sense.
There's no
benefit that he can get from actually winning this, apart from just... saying he's won it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, apparently a nice bit of jewellery, apparently. Not that we ever see that. So, I mean, also, we don't actually see the world title on the show either, do we? Did you notice
No, that is strange, isn't it? And I noticed on the, I'm not sure it was a thing at the time, but, because obviously this was the time of the split. Again, we banged on about it on our podcast before. You're, as a knowledgeable man about WCW at this time, you probably have mentioned it before, but this is the split world titles at the time, and this disputed WCW and the international title and the world title. Because again, in the previous Halloween Havoc pay-per-view, Vader's talked about as being the world champion. He doesn't come out with the belt. The belt's not on the line. And again, in this, champions have come out. Obviously, I think the tag team champions came out carrying their belts, but the two world champions don't come out with the belts.
No, it's obviously there's like it's just stuff with the NWA and rights to, I suppose, what's referred to as the big gold belt, isn't it?
Yeah.
That eventually becomes the WCW International World title for a short period.
Yeah.
Then they effectively have two world champions, as you said, for a time. Rick Rude's the international world champion at this point, I think. At some stage, because of naming issues and rights issues and all the legalities behind the scenes, I guess, they refer to Rick Rude's title simply as the Big Gold Belt. And they were having matches for the Big Gold Belt. No stipulation as to what this Big Gold Belt stood for. Again, it's just wonderful, typical, silly WCW from this era.
Well, it's insane in wrestling, where it isn't actually, you know, I don't want to break it to anybody who's listening. This might be a bit of a shock, so they want to kind of sit down and embrace themselves. But it isn't actually a legitimate sport. It's not
Whoa,
real.
What?
I know, yeah. Sorry. On that bombshell.
Show's over.
How you can have like a disputed belt. Because it isn't actually... Again, it's not like in boxing where you've got different branches and different kind of boards of control and that kind of thing. I can see when it being NWA, it was made up of, you know, a group of promoters from all over the world, that kind of thing. But how you can end up with it being, when you can actually, in theory, you can just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Because it is, you can do what you want. And they spend at least 5 or 6 minutes in each pay-per-view explaining the the ins and outs of why this isn't the world title, why this is being recognized as a world title and this isn't, and that kind of thing. It just adds to the confusion, basically.
Yeah,
it's just quite a lot at this time. So
definitely. I mean, looking at what the WWF was offering on the other channel, I suppose, the other side, I guess. I think WCW, as nonsense as it was and as silly and as daft as it was at times, there was some good stuff to be seen there. I mean, Sting was riding high. Vader was obviously very talented for a big fella. Ric Flair was, you know, probably just a smidge past his prime, but still capable of some great stuff. There's some good workers in that company. Rick Rude, obviously, a fantastic wrestler.
Yeah. It did look odd. Because you've got all these, like, all those names you've mentioned, and we're not far off. I think in the next month or so, the Big Boss Man comes over as well and debuts at just before Starcade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got people that are there. Obviously, we'll get to the Shockmaster and Davey Boy, the Ernie, there for a brief time, and again, not long after this, they're both kind of gone. It seemed to be a bit of a strange kind of, well, it was quite a transitional period, because again, you're, as we said earlier, you're building up to that point where Hogan comes in,
yeah,
and you've got these kind of people that have obviously Mean Gene, Jesse Ventura. You're watching it, and if you were watching it from, if you hadn't watched wrestling in sort of a year or so, you'd think you were watching the WWF. A lot of these guys turning up, Nasty Boys, Bulldog, like we said, Shockmaster, all these kind of random people.
Yeah, Mean Gene as well. He was very synonymous with WWF television, wasn't he? I think this is one of his first shows for the company since after leaving Vince's company. So, yeah, I mean, we'll get to the show itself. I mean, a couple of things I noticed when it actually starts. For 1993, considering WCW was very much in a bad state, the pyro at the start of the show for the time period, I don't think it was too bad. I thought, okay, that's not
and
bad.
I like the intro video, good old shouty intro, everybody gets in, you know. That's good. That's what gets you, I mean, you can't beat the old, the classic intros were the old, you think of the old WWF, the Royal Rumble intros with Vince naming all the different entrants into the thing, and the pictures coming up one by one. And but this was, for the time. And again, it was a breakaway from what they've been doing with the intros, which was, well, this seemed like a bit of a tacked on kind of pay-per-view. I think this was the Battle Bowl before had been in Starcade, hadn't it? And this year they decided to chuck in, because Halloween Havoc was what, the month before, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And they got Starcade in December, so it seemed like they just thought, well, we're just kind of, instead of putting it at Starcade, because generally it's a pretty daft idea really to base your entire biggest pay-per-view of the year around this, they will just give it its own pay-per-view and kind of give it a bit of a, not an afterthought, but like it's kind of just chucked in there, and you do get an impression it was all kind of booked maybe in a pub, you know, about a week before on the back of a cigarette packet.
A week before? Wow, you're giving WCW some props there. This could have, honestly, knowing WCW as it was around this time period, it probably booked about 20 minutes before. It was like...
But again, it didn't have that sort of... They were in this sort of WCW time period is when they were doing those high-budget kind of intros to pay-per-views, when the exploding boat with Davey Boy on the Vader on the beach and Sting, and then the Halloween Havoc one with Tony Schiavone in his house and Jake and Sting and that kind of thing. This was just more of a, listen, just get some people to shout the name of the pay-per-view before it starts and get on with it.
Yeah. I mean, they'd gone, this is almost like an additional pay-per-view for them for that year, that calendar year. They produced an extra one or two this year in comparison to 1992. So obviously they'd been just trying to put something on, hope it sticks, I guess.
Because there was a Clash of the Champions like a week before this, wasn't there?
Which
they spoke about.
Again, it's a lot of wrestling, I guess, for that time period, especially when you haven't got maybe the depth in storylines, and you look beyond the likes of Rhodes and Ding and Steamboat, you've got a good roster there, but maybe not enough to stop people getting bored if you're watching Saturday night's main event or WCW Saturday night, sorry.
Yeah.
And then that was the same night as the pay-per-view itself. You had Clash of the Champions, as you said, shortly before. Halloween Havoc was very recent, building towards Starcade. It's a lot of wrestling if you're not used to that from WCW, I guess. After the pyro and the intro and so on, we're greeted by our first sight of our commentary team, Jesse Ventura, looking absolutely glorious.
I enjoyed him and Tony Schiavone. They're probably kind of they didn't really get mentioned that much as pairing, because again it wasn't they weren't there very long, were they, together, as Jesse wasn't there very long.
No.
So, but I quite like them as a pairing. Tony Schiavone
of it, because SummerSlam 89 was one of the first pay-per-views I ever saw, and they were calling that event. So the Shawnee Ventura team, you know, I got quite fond memories of, I suppose, from that standpoint.
Yeah. He's definitely, I think, the early, again, the later WCW days, I think Schiavone was probably as kind of depressed in the as everybody else. But in this sort of time period, I think he's brilliant. And obviously going back to the old, you know, we've recently covered the first Starcade and seeing him there looking like he's about 13 years old. But he's just got, again, he's got one of those... I kind of associate watching, like, the first ever NWA, WCW I watched was when we used to get it kind of really late night over here, sort of 2-3 o'clock in the morning when they first started bringing in late night TV over here. I'm quite an old man, so I can remember.
WCW Worldwide, that would have been.
Yeah. We used to get to midnight and that was it. You know, you see the national anthem and the TV would just go off.
Yeah.
But they started bringing in like late night TV and it'd be Prisoner Cell Block H and some really sort of dodgy US sort of cop shows, that kind of thing. But then you I'd associate that period with just hearing Jim Ross's voice. And then again, the later WCW periods, I associate that with like Schiavone, obviously, after Jim Ross had left. As a pairing, yeah, I like him, definitely. He did a good job.
Yeah. Even with Ventura's odd glasses, Jimi Hendrix t-shirt and jacket,
it's a good combination.
Oh, he looks a sight, doesn't he? Speaking of combinations or pairings on this pay-per-view, we've also got, I suppose, assisting with the hosting, the combination of Mean Gene and Fifi. 1993, very different time, but even...
Different times.
But even then, it's still... I love Mean Gene. So many great memories of me, when I was a kid and stuff from his WWF days, but I felt so uncomfortable watching this. My note literally reads, Mean Gene is gross. You know,
from the WWF days, you don't really associate Mean Gene as being a bit of a perv, do you? That was never really one of his character traits. But I think it's quite good that he had that podium with the tombola there, because he could stand behind that and hide his massive erection he probably had while he was doing this. But yeah, it was very, but again, it's that kind of, again, it's an easy option to say different times. I mean, this is pretty, again, it does get, I mean, once, like if you did it the first time you went to them, you could probably think, oh, well, that's, you know,
a throwaway joke and
cheeky humor. But every single time it does get a bit grating after the first sort of eight times.
Like you said, it's very much the same joke of him and Fifi and we're on the air acting. It was bad the first time, but like you said, you can kind of get away with it. But when you've seen it, like you said, again, you said eight times.
Every single time. Oh, yeah. My word. Jesus, yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of things that make you go, oh, my word. what's your favourite Charlie Norris match?
Well, no, see, again, a lot of these people, until I saw Halloween Havoc, I literally had no idea. If you'd have said to me Charlie Norris, I would have, I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about the book at all. I had no recollection at all of Charlie Norris as a wrestler. And even after watching these matches, I've still no recollection of him, to be honest, because, it was a bit of a, I'm not sure if... So when they first started doing these, the previous sort of Starcades, was the... You'll know more about this, Simon, than me. Was the initial premise that it was drawn by random? Was it actually drawn by random, or has it always been kayfabed? Because, again, it seems...
I believe it must have been kayfabed. It must have been.
Because, again, it's... Well, I mean, I look at some of the pairings in this, and you think, well, I mean, if you are kayfabing it...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Why? Yeah, surely you can come up with some better combinations than what they come up with.
But then you get, the ones where you've got tag partners facing each other, so you sort of think, okay, that must have been done intentionally. But
I suppose if...
In a way, I suppose they've done, if they are kayfabing it, then they've done it well because they've got us still guessing about it years later. But it's
Coming into this, I was thinking, are they kayfabing it? But then the first batch, I think in the original straight away, that kind of takes away the they're not kayfabing this. This is they are kayfabing this because again the first pairing,
Cactus Jack and Vader. Yeah, so I suppose we should actually like explain the match. It's Cactus Jack and Vader, who were feuding at the time. Had just come off a pretty brutal match at Halloween Havoc. They were forced to pair together, and they were up against Charlie Norris and one half of Harlem Heat, but nobody really seemed to know which one for quite a while. Did you notice this?
No. It's slightly worrying. So I crossed out Kane and Cole about three times on my notes because they kept changing around who it was.
Cole was actually drawn, but then Kane came out, and they referred to him as Cole, and then they said, no, that's Kane. And then at one stage, Tony Schiavone just kind of gave up and just referred to him as Harlem Heat for a while.
One of Harlem Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite confusing because there's two other people called Cole as well in the other dressing room.
Yeah.
So you've got three Coles and Kane. But basically, it's Stevie Ray and Charlie Norris.
What a combination. I wish we'd seen more of these two, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, as great a team as Harlem Heat were, if it could have been these two, I mean, you don't know. We could be talking about Charlie Norris being a five-time world champion or, you know, probably not.
I mean, the finish.
Well, this is good because they sell it, don't they? They basically, Vader and Cactus are fighting all the way down to the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And Harley Race is trying to coerce them. Yeah.
You got Harley Race shouting at Vader, you need to get along with him, otherwise you can't get into the Battle Royal later, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not that I can understand why the world champion at the time, Vader, would really be that interested, but I suppose, more little plot holes there that WCW don't really explain.
No. And, the match is kind of... as you expect, but that's the thing. A lot of these matches really fucking like they seem really long. So, I look back on the time; they're not that long. There's a couple of sort of 12, 13-minute matches in there.
Yeah,
but some of them seem to go on for like a fucking. I mean, I just swear on this podcast.
You're probably okay, but I mean, I've been told by the network that they put it out for me that they want that avoided, but. I have my little explicit logo pop up next to my name anyway, so I guess it's not that important. Right.
No. This is
terrible.
As you expect, when you see the two teams lined up, there's only one result really, aren't there?
Yeah.
It was quite funny. I mean, Vader almost, like you said, the finish, he almost kills Charlie Norris basically, and himself possibly at the same time.
And Stevie Ray as well. He kind of looks like he wants to come in and break up the pinfall before Vader's actually gone for the pinfall, and then ends up just kind of standing there, sort of milling around a bit, not really knowing what to do.
It's like on a video game, and you're kind of stood up against a wall. You can't actually move any further. He's got like an invisible wall in front of him, and as he's got there too early, it's like, well, I'm not actually supposed to break this pin up, so I probably got here a little bit too early.
Yep.
So he does what every sensible doing. He stands there basically and watches.
and just watches.
It just kind of adds to the hilarity of the finish. But But yeah, so I as an opening match, I mean, yeah, it kind of sets the tone, really.
Yeah, it does.
But
Sorry, go on.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed the having the two separate dressing rooms, just so everybody knows who's a heel and who's a face.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of sat there together.
Very that's sort quite of entertaining. Survivor Series 2001-esque, isn't it, with the Alliance one side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of split camera views and so on. Yeah, that's quite good. I suppose that's a testament to how this show is. If we're saying that the dressing rooms are quite good,
that's one of the highlights. Probably. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
The next match, obviously, we get more of Mean Gene being a lecherous old man. And we get the drawing of Brian Knobbs from the Nasty Boys with Johnny B. Badge.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, looking at Charlie Norris and so on in the first match, I'm thinking things can't get much worse than this. And then we see the names Paul Roma and Eric Watts on out, and I'm not gonna lie, my heart sank. Yeah. I almost messaged you to say, should we just do another show?
I mean, strange. Again, this is one of the things which, if you are, you know, drawing these names out by kayfabe, what I suppose this is kind of, we'll just get these blokes out of the way kind of match, because. Mm. You know, you don't want to put Eric Watts with Sting, would you, or Vader, or... So if you put Eric Watts with somebody... I mean, I think Paul Roma gets a rough deal in certain ways because he's kind of put up there as being the worst horseman ever. I think he was part of a pretty lame... Well, his horseman was kind of, Flair, the Andersons... And him, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Ole Anderson was probably about 60 at that point. It wasn't a good time. I think, again, I can't think of much of his I've actually enjoyed saying that there. But the only thing I go back to is Power and Glory.
Yeah, with Hercules. In WWF. I enjoyed that. Yeah. I thought they were great.
Yeah. That was what? So, in retrospect, that was probably about 6 months of his career I enjoyed. So, he does get a fair shout, actually. But, yeah, he's better than Eric Watts, though.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I will say that.
I mean, Eric Watts was there primarily because his dad, Cowboy Bill Watts, was bought in as running the company for a short period just before this. He's very young as well at this. I mean, he's only 52 now. So he's in his early 20s there.
Yeah.
He looks out of his depth, doesn't he? He doesn't really look like he belongs... maybe on this stage at this time in his career, potentially.
What are you expecting from them?
Yeah,
really. He's in a no-win situation, really.
Yeah, definitely. And then they go on quite long as well, don't they? This is
like 12 minutes, this match.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, on the other side of that, though, a lot of these matches seem, as you said before, kind of thrown together. Just get through them, and there's a lot of things that don't make sense. British Bulldog will come to you later. There's a lot of things that don't make sense. This at least seems like they're trying to tell a bit of a story. They have Johnny B. Badd not wanting to take advantage of his partner's cheating and not liking Missy Hyatt being involved in certain aspects of the match on the outside, and sort of having conflict with his partner there about the right and wrong way of doing things, I guess. They're trying to tell a little bit of a story, I think, which is, I suppose, a step above some of the dross that we see on this show.
Yeah. I lost you for a second there. Did you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you now, yes.
I lost you for a second there. Sorry. Hopefully the people who edit it will edit that.
What do you mean, people who edit? That's me.
No, like I said, like... Yeah, sorry, I forgot. That's like somebody suggested that we're like, you know, we're not doing any shows at the minute, and Rob, UCC Rob, suggested that we went back and did a clip show of like best bits and best rants by Steve and best this and best that, and I was like, mate, I've got a job to edit one episode, and all I do to edit that episode is tag on the intro and the outro music. That's it. That takes me about an hour to do that. So to cut out best bits of shows and that kind of thing is like, that's far too much bloody effort, to be honest, mate.
I know what you mean. I like it when I speak to someone and it goes really well, and I just think, okay, I can just put that out. You know, it's...
yeah, 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 it's a lot easier. I mean, I've very rarely have edited anything out, but yeah. So yeah, like I said, yeah, there's not really this match is kind of there. I mean, I do enjoy. I feel a bit sorry for Johnny B. Badd, really, because he's great, and it's kind of I think it was a Dusty idea, wasn't that Dusty gimmick?
Yeah.
It's kind of, well, it was a tough sell in 1993.
Oh, he was over, though. Again, especially, you look at the crowd reaction.
Oh, he was over, yeah.
They bloody loved him, didn't they?
Yeah. But again, it's not sort of a gimmick you're going to really, you can only sort of go so far with that gimmick. But again, he was probably more over, because I think I've listened to a lot of other podcasts where his name's been mentioned before, and they said that he basically got an offer from Vince, and Vince said he's going to make him a big star, make him maybe a world champion. And he took the offer, basically.
Yeah.
And they said to him, well, good luck to you. You know, if he's offering you that, then,
take
you know.
Sort of thing, yeah.
But he was on every pay-per-view for probably, what, 2 years?
Yeah, he was normally in the opener as well, wasn't he? He was in the opener a great deal, and I think TV champion at one stage as well. So I mean, he had a good little rundown there, I think.
It must have been difficult, especially where they kind of WCW are based. I'd imagine you must have got some shit from the crowds.
I suppose. I thought of that, but yeah, you make a really good point there. And that sort of down south is notorious, I guess, for once upon a time having preconceived ideas. So maybe that he would have got big. I never actually thought of that before. That's a really good point.
Yeah. But again, this is from a company that, a few months prior to this had, Harlem Heat coming out in chains.
Oh, my word, yes.
Led by, a plantation owner.
Colonel Parker, so, isn't it, I think. Was he their manager at that stage? Yeah.
Yeah. I think they got rid of that after a couple of weeks. Because I thought it might be a touch on the, you know.
A touch close to
a touch, yeah, especially in the South as well. I mean, it's a bit on the nose, really, isn't it? But this match, 12 minutes, which I'm never going to get back for my life. And I think Missy Hyatt, I don't want to, I don't want to be an asshole, but she reminds me of I like Gremlins. It's one of my favorite films, and she does remind me of the female gremlin in Gremlins.
Yeah,
facially. I'm a bald headed, you know, ogre of a man. So I'm in no position to make comment on anybody's facial features, but she does remind me of the female gremlin from Gremlins.
I can see that now. That's probably all I'm all I'm going to see now. Now you put that image in my head, that's probably all I'm going to see every time I see her.
I think she was like chewing gum and making a face, and it kind of, but yeah, that was the match when it and who wins. So Johnny B. Badd and Nobbs win, don't they? And
Nobbs rolls up Eric Watts, and the commentators declare that he's got a handful of tights. I actually think it looks a lot more like he's rolling him out of a handful of his balls. It looks like he's grabbed him by the bollocks, rolled him up, and got the 1, 2, 3. It's quite an awkward looking roll up there, but speaking of things that are awkward looking, here comes the Shockmaster, mate.
Wow. Now, I've got a bit of a soft spot for Uncle Fred. Oh, obviously my podcast wife, he's a massive Tugboat fan, as you might have been noticed. He's very rarely on Twitter, and if he isn't actually swearing at people, he's normally just typing Tugboat. but I think again, I enjoyed this match. It's probably one of the matches I enjoyed the most on the pay-per-view, which is it's a low standard, mate, to be honest.
Well, yeah, definitely.
I did enjoy this because this made sense, this match, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're on the one side, the other matches, the Shockmaster drawn with Paul Orndorff facing Ricky Steamboat and Steven Regal.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of stalling throughout the match, which I suppose adds to the length of it. But there's moments between Steamboat and Orndorff that I really enjoyed. There's moments between Orndorff and Regal that I thought were good. Steamboat here didn't really make a lot of sense to me. He's supposed to be like the white meat baby face, like Mr. Goody Two Shoes, never been a heel in his life. getting his hair off because, you know, getting all wound up and cross because Orndorff and Regal want to occasionally shake hands and wrestle. It seemed quite out of place, I guess.
Yeah. I can see coming back, they've recently feuded for the TV title, haven't they, Steamboat and Regal. So it's kind of put in the two, I think, and then they went on to, did they wrestle at Starrcade?
I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure.
I think they might have done. I think this, this down is one of the only matches that actually led to something at the next pay-per-view. Because nothing else, considering we're about under a month away from the next pay-per-view.
Their biggest pay-per-view of the year, in theory.
Yeah. This does nothing at all to advance any storyline going into that pay-per-view, apart from this match, and then obviously the main event at the end. But the rest of it, it doesn't really advance any storylines. But yeah, this kind of makes sense with, obviously, Steamboat and Regal can't get along. Shockmaster and Orndorff can't get along. Shockmaster's more interested in getting the crowd to chant Paula, which I found quite that's a good old late 80s, early 90s chant of calling a male wrestler a female name.
Yeah, and he sells it well. Yeah. He really gets over it. I mean, Orndorff's brilliant.
He's pure 80s Orndorff, isn't he? He does a good job. And again, he's a guy who obviously coming to the later stage of his career here. Same as Steamboat, really. But they could both put on, again, in that previous Halloween Havoc, they put on a decent match. They could put on, again, you've got three people in this, you can put on a decent match, you can wrestle, and then you've got the Shockmaster. Mm. I do feel a bit sorry for Uncle Fred, because I'm not sure what the plan would have been if he hadn't have fallen through that wall.
No, I thought about this the other day, like where obviously he was going to be teaming with Sting and the Bulldog, and he was up against Sid Vicious, and so he's in good company, he's on a good spot in the card, and obviously he stumbles and it all goes terribly wrong. But where would they have gone? I don't quite understand where it would have ended up, I guess.
Because he was in that, probably the worst War Games match of all time. He got the pin in that match, didn't he? Games that year? Yeah.
With that weird sort of bear hug slam thing. Yeah.
I think that was kind of part of his gimmick. But it's almost like he's got you in a bear hug and he falls over with you in the bear hug and ends up landing on top of you. So it looks like he's just made a mess of that.
Splatting you, sort of.
Yeah. But I think he was gone by the end of the year. It was kind of a weird sort of time, but we're almost again where they're kind of just getting people they could get, you know. It was, well, someone's out of contracts, right, we'll get them, we'll sign them.
And he had family links as well, didn't he? He's related to Dusty somehow, wasn't he?
I think they were like a brother-in-law. Yeah, so he's part of the Rhodes family, as is, I think, Jerry Sags as well. He's part of the Rhodes family as well.
Yeah. Right. I mean, ultimately, you see the Shockmaster and Paul Orndorff go through here. Then after this match, we have, well, they describe it as a press conference, but it just kind of looks like a gang of people stood around in an empty room.
I was trying to work out when this actually was, because, I mean, if that was like that day or day before, well, Starrcade's in like a month's time.
Yeah.
And they're announcing where Starrcade's going to be.
Yeah.
4 weeks beforehand.
Also, they speak about Vader runs through all the people he's injured and all the issues that he's caused, and he cites about, where's Cactus Jack? His memory's gone. Where's Cactus Jack?
Yeah, that's what I didn't get.
He wrestled in the bloody opener on the same show.
Yeah.
That's where Cactus Jack is.
Yeah.
He was your partner.
Yeah, and again, that's what, because I assume, when I was watching that, I was thinking, well, they're announcing the venue for their pay-per-view, which is in a month's time.
Hmm.
But then when he mentioned about, where's Cactus Jack gone, I was thinking, well, maybe this was weeks before.
It must have been.
But then, obviously, but then, like, 2 weeks earlier, they'd had the Clash of Champions where he'd wrestled Flair for the world title.
Yeah.
So Flair wouldn't have been challenging him for the world title. I mean, again, I'm not sure when they actually recorded half this stuff. again, the we don't know when the Clash of Champions was. Because again, they're in this sort of time period of WCW, they book shows and they have title changes sort of in advance. Mm-hmm. So you'd have people turn up for house shows or TV tapings with the belt who weren't actually champion yet.
Yeah, because the
or without the belt, who'd lost the title.
So like WCW Saturday night and so on was all pre-taped, and then Clash of Champions were there live, and obviously the pay-per-views were there live.
Yeah.
So it'd be, I suppose, a bit of a nightmare trying to keep the timeline right as to what people have seen and what they haven't.
Yeah.
This to me seems like after the Clash of the Champions, because they reference that he's already beaten Flair.
Yeah, must be, yeah.
But again, he just made the comments about Cactus Jack really sort of make it odd to me, timing-wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're announcing
it didn't make sense.
Yeah, they're getting... obviously, WCW is a far hotter company than we initially thought going into looking at this, because they're getting offers from Sao Paulo, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand. Mean Gene said. All over
South Africa.
South Africa. Yeah. They all want Starcade, but yet they choose Charlotte, North Carolina, where they run pretty much every bloody week. You know, so.
It makes sense, because I'd imagine Ric Flair, it's just around the corner of Ric Flair's house. So, I mean,
yeah.
I wonder if he had a contract there, Flair, just on the off chance that it was going to be announced in Charlotte. Because, you know, if it had been announced in, I don't know, Sweden, something like that, he would have been, I mean, I've got this contract. Like, is it worth, is it worth going all the way over there to put my career on the line? But seeing it's going to be around the corner from my house, then I might as well go for it.
After the match, I can just nip home, sort of thing, you know?
Well, I watched that pay-per-view, and he does literally... what we're watching is sort of timeline, then he's actually still at his house when the pay-per-view starts, isn't he?
Yeah.
And or they follow him on his journey the pay-per-view, so...
And you got a very young Charlotte Flair in the hallway saying goodbye to him as he goes off to face the big evil Vader, haven't you, and so on.
Yeah. I find that weird. Again, I find the whole... Flair face thing very weird, because he lives in a mansion, doesn't he? He's obviously insanely rich. He's there with his wife, like his actual wife at the time, and then most weeks he turns up with his French maid and his
who ends up being his wife later on.
It's it's all Ric Flair as a face is a strange it's trying to get my head around, but like this pay-per-view didn't really, that press conference actually, when you look at it, doesn't actually make a lot of theme really,
and the setting as well, it's so amateur, so low key. People are just literally stood there waving bits of paper around. There's no,
you think if you're going to get someone in from Brazil, New Zealand and Australia, South Africa,
give them a bloody chair.
You're not maybe doing it in it looks like it's in a service station somewhere, isn't it?
Bang of chairs. I have a little podium, maybe some sandwiches or something, but WCW just, I'll go stand over there, and then we're just gonna tell you that we're not leaving Charlotte anyway, so
they spent all their money getting the Shockmaster in and the Bulldog and things like that, so
in that case then I'm fully on board with press conference. If that's where the money went, no problem at all.
You have to budget these things out, but yeah.
That's it. The next match. You got Awesome Kong and the Equalizer versus King Kong and Dustin Rhodes.
And you have to remind people this is actually a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Because people paid money. Probably, I don't know, I mean, this would have cost probably... pay-per-views back then probably what, 23 whatever. I mean, quite a lot of money to watch this. I mean, this is bollocks. It's absolute rubbish.
It's so so bad.
I was completely unaware of the Kongs. I had no idea who the in my head, Awesome Kong is the TNA female wrestler.
Karma in the WWF for a while. Oh dear, the Equalizer as well. At one stage, Bill is Kevin Sullivan's brother. Dustin Rhodes must have really pissed somebody off backstage. to be lumbered with this. He must have really annoyed someone, you know?
But he must have thought, well, at least I'm going through.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, but it's good to see. You don't see enough. So the Kong people, you don't see enough really fat blokes anymore, do you? in wrestling. You know, it's a lost art of...
Because
back in the 90s, you had what we termed people like Earthquake, that he was fat.
Yeah.
But going back and watching, he wasn't actually that fat. He's not like, and again, he could actually, I mean, the guy was an athlete when he could do drop kicks. He could do, and he was he was a sumo, wasn't he, before?
Yeah, Earthquake. That's right, yeah.
And even Tugboat, you know, because, but those were like your kind of standard fat people. But these guys are real roly-poly aren't they?
Yeah, they're not. Yeah. I mean, Earthquake, as bad as it sounds, Earthquake is kind of fat forwards, if that makes sense. He's got the belly.
Yeah.
These guys are fat all the way round, aren't they? They're like wide either side and so on. The one of them I read, he's only 22 here as well. He must have had a really hard childhood to look as rough and ragged as he does there.
Well, going back to Earthquake, that's always the statistic. When he debuted, he was in his sort of mid-20s in WWF, when he looked like mid-40s.
Yeah.
But this match, but he won't. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to. It doesn't really warrant kind of much discussion. This match,
no,
is it?
Definitely not. The only thing that I can sort of take from it, well, I suppose it hints towards how bad it was. Jesse Ventura even sounds bored on commentary. He just sounds just like, oh, I've had enough of this crap. And the whole Battle Bowl premise, the whole Lethal Lottery premise, is to get heels and faces teaming together and partners wrestling against each other. The partners were wrestling against each other. Bloody Kongs.
Yeah, they don't actually get in, do they, together? I think it's teased a couple of times, you know, like the two Kongs are gonna fight each other. But they don't, they're obviously saving that for, you know, Starcade down the line when they actually split up. And then you have the big blood feud main event. The Kongs. I mean, the Equalizer is free. It's slim pickings, really, isn't it?
Oh,
it is slim pickings. I mean, I always envisaged, you know, I always think of WCW and NWF having a really strong kind of tag division, but we're kind of in that, we've just gone past that period, I think, of them being, you know, the best sort of tag teams. I mean, you've still got the Nasty Boys, I suppose, and you've still got, I suppose, who were their main, Scorpio and Bagwell.
Mm-hmm.
But then...
Yeah, and the Harlem Heat are just starting eight, aren't
they? Yeah, the Kongs, the Coles. I don't know who these people are, to be honest.
No.
And they're on pay-per-view. I'd never heard of the Cole twins. Any twins?
Bear in mind, I'm a big WCW fan. Go back and watch all sorts of stuff, you know, on a very regular basis. I had to go look them up myself. I was like, who the hell are these?
Yeah, that's not a good sign, is it?
Definitely not.
If you're a big fan of that era of that company... And you've got people you've never heard of before on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So what happens? Dustin wins, and he with a bulldog, and then they kind of, the Kongs make up, they don't fight, and Nicolai just goes home, basically.
Yeah, it goes. And then the next match, we mentioned the Cole twins. One of them is in this match here, after more leching and, you know, gross behavior.
Of course,
standard, of course, it's got to happen.
We
have Sting with the other Nasty Boy, Jerry Sags, and they defeat Ron Simmons and Keith Cole. The Cole twins, as me and Andy have sort of touched upon, that you've got to see them to understand, really. They have the, if you imagine Sting's blonde sort of flat top kind of surfer hairstyle, but then combine that with a really weird long mullety bit at the back, and then there's two of them. It's really odd, and it's not, I was gonna say it's of the time, but it's not even of the time. This is 1993. I think this is more, you know,
that's the thing.
you know.
I mean, I think they mentioned it on commentary that they've got the same hairstyle, him and Sting, apart from he's got the little kind of rat's tail mullet bit at the back. But apart from that, it's the same. Even Sting by this point had decided, you know, yes, that's maybe a bit too much, the full kind of, but it's difficult to describe what kind of, just kind of like a sort of square sort of buzz cut flat top on the top, and then like a thin mullet at the back.
You got to see it to understand it, I think.
It's 1993.
Yeah.
It's, people weren't, I mean, I'm not sure in America, but I think back to, like, we're only, what, Oasis were just bringing out their new, their first stuff then in this country.
Yeah.
And you think then you've got people like that in America.
It's insane.
I mean, you look at the crowd are probably a good, you always got to look at the crowd, normally date these things, and mm-hmm. the crowd looked fairly normal for a...
Thick-rimmed glasses, there's nobody, and lots of denim, I noticed.
Yeah, yeah. But there's no one with a hairstyle like this. No. Actually, this is a good match for hairstyles, actually, because I enjoy Ron Simmons' hair, this kind of era as well. He's got kind of nice sort of... Almost, it's like a soul glow, I think it is. I think that's the term.
Yeah.
I'm not the person to be discussing hair, as it's well documented that I haven't got any. and then, again... Sags had that hairstyle for forever.
Yeah.
And then
he's still got it, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously Sting's got, you know, surfer Sting hair. But I didn't mind this match either. As a match, just kind of, you got like the moment when Sting and Ron Simmons sort of came together. It felt like a bit messy,
didn't it?
The crowd were like, actually, we're getting quite excited about this, because these are two blokes that are actually quite good, quite decent faces,
both
quite big-ish stars.
In the world type picture around that time as well, weren't they?
Yeah, so it was like, you've probably not seen this before. This is like a new kind of, you know, you don't see these guys actually taking each other on. So it felt like it was quite a big moment.
Yeah, they try and run the ropes a little bit, don't they? And that's where it gets a bit messy. Yeah. They kind of cross over each other a bit, and Sting at one stage hits the referee with his arse. But yeah, I mean, it's okay. It does its job. I mean, it gets Sting through to the Battle Royal, which I suppose is the main aim of any match like this with Sting in it. Ron Simmons comes down to the ring looking like he's about to go off and be the genie in Aladdin for pantomime.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful little waistcoat there, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a green, nice little green number, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
It didn't really fit with the... They bang on about how he's this, you know, legitimate athlete and former sort of high-level football player and a bit of a badass. And he comes in looking like a bit like a leprechaun, really, but minus the hat. He's got like the little green waistcoat on.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit.
It's of this time, but again, it's not. It's of WCW of this time. It's not even really... It's not, you know, 1993. Do you know what I mean? It's another note there as well. I mean, Keith Cole in this match, when I was sort of looking into the Cole brothers, the Cole twins, apparently he was the opponent for Terror Rising on his WCW debut in 1994. And Terror Rising obviously went on to be, you know, Triple H. So, I suppose that's his main claim to fame, I would guess.
That's something, isn't it? Really, I mean, that's it, pretty much, I'd imagine, because his poor old brother was one of the only people not to get drawn out of the hat.
Just spent the whole time in his gear with his glorious mullet, sat in the change rooms, watching everyone else wrestle. I mean, I suppose he got paid, so, I mean, it's you know, well, I'd hope he got paid.
Yeah, unfortunately, he got to watch the show as well, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I suppose it's better, though, because he's being paid to watch it, I suppose. And for me to rewatch it, I think you would need to pay me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've watched this twice, so... Yeah. Yeah. I know,
After this,
so that's good. Yeah, well, you say the end of this, Simmons gets a bit, doesn't he? You can see the kind of story is he's getting pissed off with Cole, because Cole's kind of inexperienced and trying to sort of do too much, and then he beats him, he gives him a power slam after the match.
Yeah.
And kind of, I think he's been not far off of, I think he had a brief heel turn before he left. But yeah, you come out of this thinking like, well, actually, this obviously did the result Sting through to the next round, and also made Ron Simmons, you know, look a bit more like a kind of badass as well. Oh, apart from the green jacket.
You said like Simmons leaving not long after this.
Yeah,
he actually went on to, was it in a warehouse, a Coca-Cola warehouse?
Did he?
I think the actual product, I'm not sure of. I'm fairly certain it's Coca-Cola. I need to look it up.
Yeah,
he actually left wrestling between WWE. Again, don't quote me directly on this. The timeline, yeah, I may be getting muddled up on. But he, I think it was when he left WCW, he then went and was like a supervisor or a foreman.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain it was a Coca-Cola warehouse.
Yeah. It wasn't Lucky Charms, was it? Cause
no,
the jacket.
They saw him walk to the ring and go, that's the guy for us.
That's the man. You know? Yeah, that's our guy, yeah. And they could probably pay him more than WCW paid him at the time as well. So
yeah, most likely. And eventually he got tapped up by Bruce Prichard and Vince McMahon to go and be Farouk. But yeah, at the time he was working in I'm fairly certain, a Coca-Cola warehouse for a while.
He was a bit of a waste in WWF, really. When you think, again, he came in with the blue helmet as Farouk.
Yeah.
And then, that led to eventually like the Nation of Domination kind of thing. But he was, again, I'm going for a bit of a, maybe about a year ago, I started watching, or maybe a couple years ago now, I started watching Rules from the beginning. Like at night, I kind of watch like, and I've got to kind of late 99 now.
Okay,
so
a lot of episodes.
That's a lot of episodes, and now obviously you've got SmackDown as well. So it's taking me longer to, but at that point where he's just kind of him and Bradshaw becoming like the famous sort of APA kind of acolytes kind of thing, getting into bar rules and fights and that kind of thing. And but he was like a proper badass. Like you could have done stuff with him. Again, it was a pretty crowded field at the time. You know, you still had Austin, Rock, Triple H,
X-Pac, wasn't it?
Yeah, Big Show. But you felt like he was kind of never really, again, apart from having that he won two world titles. I think he was older when he broke in. He was probably late 20s, when he made his big kind of break in at WCW. So he was probably probably just a bit too old to get that big push.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense.
But yeah, he looked in this. He actually looked impressive. So
And again, he's not long held the world title. He sort of traded back and forth with Vader as well. So he was quite a big deal for the company. But then he took his little green jacket and went and worked at the warehouse. Yeah,
that's probably the sign, thinking I need to get out when they're making me coming out in this little green jacket. And
I hope somewhere he's still got it, man. I hope
the writing's on the wall. Yeah.
Okay. After this contest, we actually get on to, well, again, after more Mean Gene and Fifi silliness, we get on to two of the biggest names in the industry, I guess, at some stage in their career. We have Stunning Steve Austin.
Max Payne.
Max Payne, yeah.
yeah.
Stunning Steve Austin tagging with Ric Flair, and they're up against Max Payne and Too Cold Scorpio. This wasn't too bad. You know, I think probably the best match of the night for me so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's my first ever Max Payne match I've ever seen. So
What a treat it was for you.
But he was in there with three good people. So, I mean, again, Austin, Flair, Scorpio, you know, those three can properly wrestle. Don't they? Scorpio's, probably a wasted talent, really. He never really,
so
probably...
charisma, ability, but he loved it, didn't he?
That's the thing, yeah. And I think he had a pretty acrimonious, when he left WCW, he made some... a lot of statements regarding kind of racism and that sort of thing, and he kind of, I think, he burned a few bridges there.
One of his time crossed over with Bill Watts as one of the bookers.
Well, yeah.
You know, there's no smoke without fire, I guess.
Well, no, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's three. And again, there was this kind of made sense storyline-wise because you had the issues with, again, that Clash of the Champions, which led into this, where it was Flair and Vader and Austin got involved in that match. But then it seemed to be leading towards a Flair-Austin feud at some point. Obviously, as the, you know, the main event, were kind of pointing that direction as well. But I didn't happen anytime near to this.
You had the
it seemed to be
Flair and Anderson up against the Hollywood Blondes around this period.
Yeah.
That was kind of,
yeah.
I mean, Austin's just split from Brian Pillman at this point. But Austin as well, he says in this time frame that Flair wasn't really helpful to Steve Austin's career. If anything, he maybe was a hindrance and tried to bury him a touch. So perhaps that sort of went along with them not working together as much. To me, like, again, like what you're seeing on screen here, it would have made perfect sense.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, because again, it seems weird having a face, Ric Flair.
Yeah,
you know, it just didn't seem right.
Yeah, in this time period, yeah, definitely, it's very strange.
Yeah, this is a good match. He's got obviously Scorpio, you know, can put on a good match against anybody, and then Max Payne's there to be the big sort of muscle power guy. But Robert Parker as well. I'd never really got the. I'm quite a big fan of managers. I think there should be more managers now, especially in this time where you've got. I tend to sort of try and steer away from talking about the current stuff to just get Steve angry. But
I've noticed.
You noticed, yeah, especially AEW. We don't talk about AEW anymore because but I think there's definitely a place for managers. Not Robert Parker.
No. It's so dated. It's almost like a 70s. I know, isn't it?
He still had a few years, didn't he, in him, I think. He was still going maybe two or three years down the line.
Yeah, he ends up in a weird angle with Sensational Sherry in a few years' time.
Yeah.
Where they end up feuding against each other. They have a match. I think they end up marrying each other, or she leaves him, or he leaves. Again, WCW, fantastic. You know?
And he also, I think he didn't, he pooed himself, didn't he, in a games match?
Yes.
I believe.
Yeah.
Legitimately pooed himself. So... I mean, is that?
Yeah.
It's not, if you're going to be dressed like, you know, Colonel Sanders in an all-white suit, it's probably not a, you know, it's not the best thing to be putting yourself, is it?
Wrong colour.
Well, it's not the best thing anyway. Yeah. Whatever you're wearing, really. But a white suit is...
It's something you want to avoid if possible, especially when you're in, you know, grown-up years, I guess, when you're little, maybe you can get away with it a bit more.
and live on TV in a cage. In a white suit is, it's a good match.
Speaking of Cage, actually, one of the things I sort of found when I was making notes on this and looking into the guys, Max Payne apparently helped put the steel cage up at WrestleMania 2 for the Hogan Bundy match.
Did he?
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I don't know why little things like that sort of make me go, huh, that's quite cool. You know, it just
so he was actually fact. Like a, yeah, he was a legitimate. Musician. I mean, he might have been a magician as well, but yeah.
He was a magician. You had Steve Austin, Ric Flair, and Two Cold Scorpio. Max Payne used his power of magic that when he tagged in, he made all the atmosphere in the arena vanish.
Vanish. And all the money for WCW vanished as well. But he was when he moved, so who was he in WWF?
Oh, bloody hell.
Mountain Rock. And he played a big guitar with WWF logo, sort of WWF logo shaped guitar. Yeah. I think if you go on his Wikipedia, which I might have done over the past few days, first time, I'm probably the only person who's been on his Wikipedia in 10 years. But
oh, that was me as well, mate. He's had two hits.
two of us, yeah. So I see he's going there every now and again to check, see what's on there. But I think he is a legitimate musician. But
yeah.
He did the job in this match.
The national anthem on WCW pay-per-view as well. Just as one long guitar solo. Yeah, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was a WCW pay-per-view. But he played the national anthem as well. Yeah, so... another little note I took from this, well, two notes, I suppose, towards the end of it. First of all, the referee's wearing trainers. I don't know why that pisses me off so much, but it really...
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, again, funny little things irritate me. And the referee's come out in his shirt and his trousers, and he's got trainers on. It just looks ridiculous. It shouldn't make me as angry as it does. I don't know why it bothers me, you know?
Yeah, but little details.
Yeah, yeah. And then at the end, Ric Flair wins with a figure four. We don't see that very often, do we?
I know, I was going to say that. Yeah. That must be a face thing.
Ah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's never won as with a figure four. That's a heel. You'd never see him. It's like getting to the top rope and hitting that move, isn't it, from the top rope? Yeah, so it never happens.
Important, yeah. Brilliant.
So it must be a face thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. The next match, then, after, again, more Fifi and Mean Gene silliness, we have, again, I suppose, partner versus partner, but it's not it's not as great as that tagline potentially makes it sound. You've got Mark Bagwell tagging with Tex Slazenger. What a wonderful name.
Mm-hmm. It's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're born and your parents give you the name Tex Slazenger and you don't already live down safe, you need to, because that's the only place your name is acceptable. And then they're facing the always brilliant Ravishing Rick Reed and his partner Shanghai Pierce, which again is a wonderful name. What's your favourite Shanghai Pierce match?
Well, again, I was completely oblivious to Shanghai Pierce. Well, obviously, it turned out that I had watched a few of their matches before.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise that was who these two people were. I mean, at least this is better. You do get a bit of interaction between the two tag team partners. You know, it's not just kind of... They do end up having a scrap and kind of making up at the end. So there's that, and the crowd do get quite excited about that when they start fighting as well. It's like, you know.
Yeah, because again, it's what you kind of promised with the premise of Battle Bowl, isn't it? You kind of promised.
That's the whole point,
partner
isn't it?
Versus partner and people who are feuding, having to be made to team up. And I just don't think you saw enough of it on this show to warrant the hype, I guess.
Maybe that's kind of, they're trying to do that to kind of try and make it seem like it is a bit legit as well, because again, if you are booking this kayfabe, some of these matchups, why would you put them together like this? It's just rubbish. Like, again, but you would, if it was kayfabe, then you'd make it interesting. You'd make every match, you know, like people that are feuding together or tag team partners against each other, you would make it interesting.
Yeah, of course. You wouldn't just randomly chuck in one of the Colberts.
yeah. But they've kind of done it. They've done the worst of both worlds, really. They have kayfabed it, but they've made it crap.
Yeah, exactly.
that's the thing. If you are going to kayfabe it, then just book it. You could book this paper with the people you've got involved in this. I think most people, we could, even if you pulled them up every random, you could probably book it better than how this has been booked.
Yeah, definitely. It's just a mess all over, isn't it?
Yeah. But Rick Rude, I was a big fan of Rick Rude. I've always been a big fan of Rick Rude. Until the last sort of couple of years, I wasn't really that familiar with his WCW work.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does look a bit like, again, I watched when he came in at Halloween Havoc. When he came in as a phantom, like he looks like the business. This to me, he looks a bit. I mean, we're only probably really not far away from when he had to retire, are we? Which was, you know, not related to any sort of ongoing injuries that he had here,
no,
sort of visibly.
Japan, wasn't it?
Yeah,
he hurt his back.
He just looks a bit like overly. He almost looks too beefed up in this, I think, and he looks a bit
ridiculously defined, isn't he? Like there's
looks a bit pissed off. Part of my friends, but he when he came in, like when he was a phantom, he looked like sort of chiseled, but like defined kind of chisels, where in this he looks like he's still defined, but he's kind of almost, he looks a bit like overly big. But yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, but the tights he's wearing as well.
I beat
them all on across his arse, and everyone's faces down his legs and so on. Just brilliant stuff. I mean, it's ahead of his time, really, I think, when you look at whatever people were wearing at that stage. This match for me actually works as well, because I think so many matches on this show, as you stated yourself, quite poorly booked. There's not a great deal of crowd heat because you've got baby faces and heels, and nobody really knows who to cheer with, and the storytelling doesn't help the audience out. This match, I think, works well because Rude's team effectively work as the bad guys, and Bagwell's team work as the good guys, just for the purpose of this sort of 10, 15, whatever it was, match. And it works, and the crowd get into it, and it's so simple. Because, you know, the good guys and the bad guys don't have to stay that way after the match. It's that they're doing it. The whole purpose is to get into Battle Bowl. So it makes sense.
Yeah, this is kind of booked, like, as the actual match is booked like a kind of traditional tag team match.
Yeah.
Where you've got, again, you've got one guy who's the sort of face in peril, getting beaten down for most of the match. And then the other guy wants to get in and make the tag, but they keep pulling him away, and he makes the tag and the ref hasn't seen it, and these are all traditional tag team sort of tropes which make classic, you know, tag team matches of that time. Again, it's different now, but of that time, this was like a, and again, and it kind of makes sense with the, you know, I've done a lot of research in characters of Shanghai, Pearson, Tex Lazinger, but from all the research I've done, they appear to be like cowboy characters. Is that right?
Yeah. So
they both want to kind of win, because they want, you know, they want to be, and they quite happily sort of screw each over to get the, to get into the big. I think I've probably done too much, thought too much about Tex Lazinger and Shanghai Pierce, to be honest. But I can see why they would, again, turn on each other because of their really well defined characters, and at the end they're like, oh well, you know, we make up, and they celebrate it by beating up Bagwell a bit more afterwards.
Yeah, I mean,
and they're all friends at the end.
That's, I think that's how everyone should celebrate everything, just picking Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, if he's there, it seems like a missed opportunity if you don't really.
Give him a bit of a kick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slazinger and Pierce, they went on to be the Godwins, didn't they, in the WWF?
Yeah.
Slazinger, I believe it was, went on to be Midian as well.
Yeah.
So they went on to have, you know, pretty decent careers throughout the 90s and so on.
And they both turned up at the Undertaker's thing, didn't they, every week?
Yeah, fair play to them. Yeah. Marcus Bagwell wasn't there for them to give him a kick again, but never mind.
He's like is he like an escort or something now? He's like a male gigolo, that kind
of
thing.
He was for a while, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah. The advert
for his services, shall we say, popping up in various places. But he's a bit of a state now, isn't he? There's a picture of him recently. I don't know if he'd just been in a fight somewhere, or perhaps he'd run into the Godwins and they gave him a kick. I don't know.
Maybe, but,
he looked a bit of a mess, whether he'd had a bit of a drink and a bit of a fall or something. I'm not 100% sure, but this picture he didn't look overly well in, so hopefully everything's okay there. But
yeah.
I mean, after we see Reed and Shanghai Pierce progress to the Battle Royal, final qualifying match is Road Warrior Hawk tagging with Rogers. They beat Davey Boy Smith and the other half of Harlem Heat. This match pissed me off.
I actually, when you look at the sort of context, Bulldog, this was it for Bulldog, wasn't it? I think he was gone, like, literally after. I mean, you can tell by his demeanor in the match. I know, kind of storyline, it's like, well, he's just annoyed with, you know, the future Booker T.
Yeah.
So he didn't really want to get involved. He's just kind of laughing most of the match. But then he just kind of, when it finishes, he just kind of walks off like, well, you know, see you later, guys.
I liked all the stuff with Rip Rogers. I thought that was quite funny. That made me laugh. Yeah. When, you know, he's coming to the ring and he's overexcited about his name being drawn and he's tagging with Hawk. And in the end, Hawk gets annoyed and just gives him a bit of a slap. Yeah. And he ends up spending the whole match trying to crawl to the ring after taking his pasting.
He sells it amazingly, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. and then at the finish, Hawk grabs him, picks him up, throws him onto Cole, and Rip Rogers actually gets the pinfall. And it's brilliant. It's just comedy stuff. It's really well done. What annoyed me is the Bulldog. We speak about the storytelling in the previous match where one team effectively plays it one way, the other team the other, and it kind of made sense. The crowd are into it and so on.
Yeah.
Here, the Bulldog is cheering on Hawk as Hawk is beating up the Bulldog's own partner.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if that was... Yeah, if that was how it was booked, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not even like just a little bit. He's like proper going for it. He's trying to get Hawk chant going and...
Yeah.
To the point where it just kind of took away... I mean, to me, you're building up this event. This whole pay-per-view is about the main event, getting into the main event, getting into the Battle Royal to win this ring or whatever. That's the whole purpose of the show. Yeah. And then the match before the main event, you've got a guy who, in theory, name value is one of your bigger stars, basically acting like he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care if he's in it or not. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I mean, maybe he knew he was on his way out. But then, again, if he was literally on his way out after this show, why book him?
There's two ways of looking at it, isn't there? One, why book him? And two, if he has been booked, he's being paid to do a job. Do your job. You know, do what you're earning your money for. I mean, when Hawk and Rip Rogers win, Bulldog celebrates. Yeah. Bulldog sort of high-fives Hawk, and he's not qualified. It makes... Oh, I just dead my head. Again, it's three's trainers, mate. Yeah. Again, it's silly little things that really annoy me, you know?
I don't really... I was always a... Everybody holds up Legion of Doom as being, you know, probably one of, if not the greatest of all time. I was probably exposed to Demolition before I was exposed to Legion of Doom. So I've always got a soft spot for Demolition. But I've always found Hawk to be like a really dislikable character. To be honest. I'm pretty sure people that do like the Legion of Doom for Animal to Hawk. Animal was always cooler than Hawk. Hawk would be the guy getting beat up for 10 minutes, I think. And then Animal would come in, do the hot tag, do the sort of power slam. I couldn't really ever take to Hawk, to be honest.
A few weeks back, I had Mags on the show, and we did a Road Warriors episode.
Yeah.
It was not long after Animal passed away, and it kind of coincided rough with the anniversary of Hawk's passing. And me and Mags were both very much Hawk guys. That's the guy we preferred. But then my wife is completely on the same side as you. Animal all the way, you know?
Mm. Well, I mean, she's obviously a woman with good taste, mate. So, you know, she's...
Thank you very much.
But I always find he tends to... I suppose it depends, you know. He was the kind of... What used to really annoy me, I was going to swear then, but he used to like take a pile driver, that kind of thing. He just bounced back up.
Yeah.
I suppose that's part of the gimmick. But I always found that intensely annoying, to be honest.
Same as when Hogan with Orndorff and stuff like that as well.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Again, that's Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I can see Hulk Hogan doing that and sort of hulking up afterwards, but not Hawk. But, you know, that's kind of... And it just comes across, like, in this match, like, he beats up his tag team partner. I know he's supposed to be, like, a badass, isn't he, basically? Mm-hmm. It's Hawk, you know? But yeah, I just kind of find him slightly dislikable. But, you know, there we go. Yeah. We've all got opinions.
Well, that's it. Speaking of opinions, that's all the matches that are done for qualifying for the Battle Bowl. They will then sort of, I guess, fill a bit of time with Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura giving their opinions as to who they think might win the actual Battle Bowl main event. They then go to Mean Gene, and he speaks about who he thinks might win, and then asks Jesse Ventura again, who do you think will win, Jesse, when Jesse's just spent 2 minutes explaining what he thinks?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just so silly. But, I mean, yeah. I'm guessing you do get the impression that, time, aren't they?
Yeah. And you do get an impression there's nobody, on most of these WCW pay-per-views, I get an impression that there's nobody in balls the air producing people. It just seems to be, like, the end. The end is a perfect example of the end of the pay-per-view is a perfect example of that, where it just kind of, well, we'll get there later on, but it just kind of cuts off.
Yeah. Well, they overran, obviously. They've overran it, but they keep asking Jesse Ventura the same question.
Yeah. But he spent about 2 minutes talking about, we're going to throw to somebody, and it's like, actually, no, well, we're not going to throw to that person. And it's like, oh, actually, we just ran out of time, so good night. Yeah.
So we go into...
So what a lineup then for the... For the main event.
For the main 16-man Battle Royal, the Battle Bowl. What the whole evening, this whole pay-per-view, this whole event of captivating, fantastic, high-octane action has been about. Building towards this moment where you get the 16 qualifiers. I mean, it was 25 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of... Okay, we're probably spoilt from, you know, the majority of Battle Royals watched over the years have been Royal Rumble. Now that's kind of a perfect format, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think
for
so.
A Battle Royal, this seems like a when you get, you know, if you had everybody in there all at the same time, mess, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You can't until you get down to, like, again, like in this, you get down to the final four. There's nothing you can't. It's just mess. It's not enjoyable.
Exactly. I mean, Ventura touches on that a little bit as well, doesn't he? He says, nothing to call here, Schiavone. Just sit back and watch them fight.
That's what he needs to do. But the ring announcer announces who's been thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really need to, you know, that's all you need to do is call who's been eliminated, really. And it seems like a small... I might have imagined this, but... In the past, did they do, what was it, the two-ring battle royal thing, where you get thrown from one ring into the next ring?
Yeah, that was...
Was that
back in 1990 or 91, maybe? Something around that time. And they'd throw... I can't even remember the rules. It was another...
No, so you got from one ring...
You know...
You got from one ring to the other ring, and then... Last person in the first ring would go against the last person in the second ring for something at the end.
That's right, yep.
Yeah. I don't know what this just seems really crowded, and
mm-hmm.
and again, there's a lot of people in here who clearly aren't going to be winning it, are there?
One of the Kongs, for example.
Yeah, well, obviously, Rivers is out like immediately, isn't he? I think. Yeah. And given... Stewie's still selling his injuries from the previous match.
Yeah, he's a little bit low key here, but he's a bit of a star of the show. And these couple of minutes he's got, he uses brilliantly.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah. So again, this first match, you know, that's one of the main focuses of the match is him trying to get to the ring, and then when he finally gets there, he gets knocked down again, and then like this, he's probably stumbling into the ring for about 2 minutes. When everybody else, he's the last person out as well, so everyone else is stood in the ring. Watching this guy, Riff Rogers, sort of crawl to the ring. When did he overran? We got 2 minutes of Riff Rogers crawling down to the ring, you know?
Just to get thrown out again.
Priorities. To go out immediately,
And obviously you've got the rule here as well that they spoke about throughout the show.
Yeah.
In that if you're thrown out of the ring but land on the ramp, imagine like the elevated walkway, similar to what AEW has at the moment.
Yeah,
you're not actually eliminated because you're not on the floor. So at one stage towards the end, you get the really unique sight of, I think it was the last four, all fighting outside the ring. I've not seen that in a battle royal before.
No. I think earlier on, Vader picks up a sort of gorilla, presses him, but instead of doing it over either side or the side which hasn't got the ramp, he walks over to the ramp and presses him onto the ramp.
Yeah.
For no particular reason. But yeah, so when you get down to the last four, it gets quite good.
Yeah, yeah, but, it's not bad then, is it? With Sting and Vader's interactions and Austin's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. That's what kind of felt it was leading to something like involving Austin. But I think Starrcade, it was him in Dustin Rhodes again for the US title. Mm. So not related to any of this at all. But yeah, but this is where you get the very slim amount of storytelling in this pay-per-view comes in this sort of last four.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get if Vader attacks Ric Flair on the outside.
Yeah.
Flair's not actually eliminated, but the referee declares him unable to continue because of the beating he takes.
Yeah. He gets nice elbow drops to the balls.
Yeah, big monster elbow drop right on the bottom.
Yeah.
He's then put on what I'm assuming is a stretcher they use for people who are scared of heights, because it never actually raises more than a foot off the ground.
Yeah.
Everyone has to bend over to push it. It's so low.
Yeah.
He has to leave, and that's obviously building towards the Vader Starrcade match that you know, highly professional press conference earlier on was about. You then get Austin and Vader beating up on Sting for a while. Eventually, Austin takes a bump to the ramp and falls off and is eliminated. And then you're effectively eliminating himself, I guess. He goes for the Stinger Splash, Vader moves, he tumbles out the ring. And then
that looks a bit crap, doesn't it?
No, that was awful.
Yeah.
And then basically your world champion, who hasn't at age shown you his belt to say he's the world champion, has then gone on one Battle Bowl as well, when maybe somebody else winning it could have led towards a confrontation with world champion at a later date. It's just, again...
Anything,
it's just poor... I just think it's just poor storytelling, it's poor booking, it's just poor.
I mean, you could have given it to Austin.
Yeah.
You know, that would have, you could have like sort of Sting and Vader eliminate himself and Austin wins. Because again, Rick Rude wouldn't have needed it really.
No.
Clearly, it's an open effort to Flair. And then Sting had won it the year before. I know he won a previous one.
Yeah, so it was, the previous two
it didn't really make sense.
The Great Muta won the first one, I think, and then Sting won the one after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I like the kind of, they were selling it that it was, I think Flair and Harley Race got involved at a side, and then Vader came out. Now, Shivani was like, oh, Harley Race, he's a coward. He's terrified of Ric Flair. He knows Ric Flair's going to beat Vader at Starrcade, and that kind of, because obviously with it being the 10th Starrcade, you go back to the first Starrcade, which was Flair and Harley Race. So all kind of, again, this is all that actual main event was all by accident, wasn't it? It was supposed to be in between Halloween Havoc and Starrcade. And in between Halloween Havoc and this, you had the Vader Arn Anderson incident, because the original main event for Starrcade was supposed to be Vader and Sid.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So this is all probably pretty hastily kind of cobbled together.
Yeah.
But this was, if you go onto that pay-per-view, that match, Starrcade, Flair and Vader is, I'd say probably slightly better to what you would have got if it would have been, because the plan was for Sid to beat Vader.
But yeah, I think incident, didn't he, in Blackburn with Arn Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, I think things worked out for the best, apart from people getting stabbed and fired and that kind of thing, but ultimately, it all worked for the best.
Yeah. I suppose it worked out for the best in December at Starrcade. What didn't work out for the best was
deciding
to use the Battle Bowl concept in its own pay-per-view. Obviously showed it didn't work out for the best, because they didn't touch this concept again for another 3 or so years. They've chucked it back together in 96 for a Slamboree show. And that was it for the whole Lethal Lottery Battle Bowl concept. Only a few of them done. This was the only standalone event. What I normally do with people who come on and review old pay-per-views is give it a rating out of 10. Where do you... I think this is potentially going to be the lowest mark we've had. Where do you... No, sorry, I apologize. We give it a rating on a... like a school grading system, A, B, C, okay. And so on. That's kind of what we normally do. Yeah, apologies.
Right. Okay, so what do we go down to? What's the lowest? Oh, ungradable? Or I'm not going to give it an ungradable, but...
G? Did people used to get Gs when they were at school? Or an F?
I think F, G. I'm not sure if you get a G. I think ungradable might have been after an F.
I had a few ungraded.
Yeah, I don't think it's ungradable. I'd say... That's a good noise. Sorry. I'd say probably an E. I might be being generous.
I think you are. I think you are.
I'm a generous man, mate.
It's F all over, mate, for me. If I'm being generous, it's an F plus. You know, it's
probably the worst pay-per-view I've seen. I've seen worse recently, to be honest, right? I'd say, like, in recent modern times. The last 10 minutes, because the Sting, Vader, Austin stuff was pretty meaningless, really.
It went on for a while as well, didn't it?
5 minute, it did go on for ages, yeah, but a lot of this, again, it's almost 3 hours. I know that was standard for pay-per-views in that time, but you could have condensed this into like a 2 hour Clash of Champions, couldn't you, really?
Yeah. You could have cut out all the mean stuff for a start.
Yeah, that would have been. And then if you take that and Rogers crawling around, that's probably 10 minutes. I've seen worse, but it's probably, having gone back and watched a lot of old pay-per-views for our show as well, this is probably the worst I've seen on that sort of scale.
Yeah.
But we've probably got, you know, in the next few months, I'm sure NXT will probably bring it back and we'll have that to look forward to. So
yeah, I mean, the concept, I don't mind. I just think that it was not done well here.
No. But again, you've got to, like we said earlier, if you're gonna draw it out randomly, I mean, I don't know why you do that, because again, I think you could probably do it in like an NXT. If you did draw it out randomly, you've got enough people of a kind of similar. It wouldn't be very entertaining, to be honest, probably. But I don't know why you would. I'm confused myself now. But in wrestling, like we say, you can make things, you can do what you want, you can do exactly what you want, you can write, you can book whatever you want. Why would you leave it up to chance? There's kind of literally no point in doing that. The concept,
that's what this is. I think they are I don't think this is left to chance, or this can't, they can't have been that foolish to not. And Vader and Jack and the Kongs facing off, and Schlesinger and so on, shows that it is
Flair and Austin.
It is obviously booked this way. Of course it is. It's all predetermined. However, they've done such a bad job of booking it. It's got a sat here going, did they mean that? You know, it's
maybe that was the whole idea. So who was left? Train didn't get picked.
The Evercole twin.
The Evercole. And they mentioned that Bobby Eaton was back there. Yeah, I never saw him. But they mentioned on commentary that he was still yet to be picked.
See, if Bobby Eaton was there,
that was confusing as well. Was it? Because, you'd think that, wouldn't you? So, but what confused me as well is when some people, once they'd wrestled, were back in the locker room again. Like the Nasty Boys were back in there at the end after they'd already both wrestled and already kind of gone through. So it kind of made it, I think we've probably wasted too much time.
Hope nothing ever happens to make me have to sit through Battle Bowl 1993 ever again.
I won't be watching it again, no.
So, no. with a resounding panning from you and I, and a grade of either an E or an F, potentially, I agree, probably worst interview I've seen in a long, long time. And as we sign off on that really happy, cheery note, Andy, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you online and your brilliant show, Bang Podcast, that I enjoy?
Yeah. So we're, so at Bang Bang Podcast on Twitter. Yeah, I mean, our podcasts are very honest, but probably, again, where there's probably more swear. There's more swearing in it, and it probably turns into a bit of a shambles at times. but we talk about pay-per-views and old wrestlers and just general rubbish, to be honest. But yeah we're a Bang Bang Podcast.
I really enjoy it, mate. I love listening to your show. As I tweet quite often, mate, when I'm listening to it, it genuinely makes me laugh. It's great. I really enjoy it. So yeah, keep it up, man.
Well, we used to have those sort of conversations anyway in the pub, so we just thought we'd record it and stick it out there, see if people enjoyed it. So and then we're on Facebook as well, but literally there's nothing on the Facebook page. It's not really worth. Do people do Facebook anymore? Not really. It's just my wife puts my kids on there. That's about it.
Yeah, I've got a Facebook page. I don't really deal, I suppose. I mean, I much prefer Twitter, so.
Yeah,
I've also got an Instagram, believe it or not. I've got an Instagram for the show, but that's very much dependent upon my 13-year-old daughter setting that up and helping me run it, because I have got no bloody clue what I'm doing.
No, I've got a personal Instagram, but I don't ever really do anything on there. I mean, we could set one up for the show, but it would just be pictures of me and Steve talking. I don't really think that's Instagram worthy, to be honest.
No, maybe
both definitely got this for the airways rather than the screen. But thanks for having me, mate. I've really enjoyed it.
Again, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on.
That's all right. Cheers, son.
Thanks a lot. Allow it.
Thanks, mate. Bye.